Hello, and thanks for being with us here on the New Life Show, a series of talks with Dr. Michael Lightman. Hello, Dr. Lightman. Hello, everyone. Hello, Nitzma Zoz. Hello. Today, we'd like to talk to Dr. Lightman about the wisdom of Kabbalah that he's been teaching for over 30 years now. And we'd like to ask about the question it brings up in people once they hear the words, the wisdom of Kabbalah or the Book of Zohar. Be with us, Yael, please. Yeah, the wisdom of Kabbalah, the Book of Zohar, the Ten Sefirot. When we hear these concepts, these names, it does something to us. Sometimes it causes rejection, sometimes it gives us the shivers. It awakens a very broad range of feelings and emotions. And we'd like to really understand and ask you, why do all of us, one way or another, feel that the wisdom of Kabbalah has a, so to speak, bad reputation? So let's try and understand, where does this bad reputation come from? The wisdom of Kabbalah comes from Adam. It's a person who lived 5,777 years ago, and he discovered this wisdom. And he taught a few people. The 20th generation of his students is already Abraham. Abraham lived in a completely different state in ancient Babylon, that back then there was a crisis in the Babylonian society. Suddenly people stopped understanding each other. The ego erupted among them, pushing them away from each other. Previously, they were pretty simple, friendly nations towards one another. All the nations of the world were in ancient Babylon back then. And Abraham, he was one of their priests. Terach, his father, he was the priest of all the Babylonians. And Abraham was his successor. This was in the times of Nimrod, king of Babylon. And Abraham started inquiring, what's going on with his people, with all of these 70 nations of the world that inhabited Babylon back then? And he discovered that the ego that used to be so small, the will to receive that existed in everyone, where people were satisfied with the small things. They had plenty of fish from the water around them. They used to grow onions and garlic, different vegetables, and it was enough for them. They lived a good life. And suddenly they started fighting with each other. There were real riots. These nations against those nations, those groups against these groups, and they wanted to build a tower up to the sky, meaning a symbol of their ego, that they simply wanted to break all the boundaries. Abraham discovered that it's because of the ego that suddenly erupted in mankind, something that never happened before, a very new phenomenon. And then he discovered that it's not happening simply so. But if by nature people's egos erupt and it puts them on a path of collision with one another, then in nature, besides this negative force which is revealed, the will to receive, the evil inclination, our ego, besides that, in nature, there's also the positive force that we, human beings, despite the bad force that's revealed, We can use the positive force in nature and balance these two forces and then to exist in between two forces, the bad force and the good force. And when we exist in between two forces, when we exist in both equally, between them we discover the internality of nature, called the upper world, or the upper force. Abraham discovered it, and he understood that all of humanity, because their ego is becoming revealed, actually have to come to this revelation in their lifetime and to build their life in accordance with these new parameters. The bad force and the good force balanced among all people and all people connected amongst them, balancing these forces, and then they discover the internality of nature and the upper world, where this entire life in this egoistic, primitive way in this world, the way it was in ancient Babylon, it's only in order to bring them to this development. And he started explaining it and publicizing it. Rambam says that he turned to the people of Babylon, and many people joined him from all the 70 nations, and he gathered them into one group and called it Israel, from the word Yashar Kel, meaning straight at the Creator, meaning directing them at the internality of nature. God is the internality of nature. And they followed him. They were very different from all the rest of the Babylonians that didn't want to join, that didn't correctly understand what Abraham recommended. And so he took this group, who were the representatives of all of these 70 nations of the world that inhabited Babylon, and he took them to the land of Canaan, as the Torah says. And what he did with them was that he all the time taught them how to connect in love another as thyself, where love covers for all crimes, how to be connected between them in a good and nice way. And this group advanced towards that. They really discovered the internality of nature, the inner force of nature. They were really included in these two opposite forces, the force of reception, the force of bestowal. They existed in harmony between these two forces, the so-called middle line, and they developed this method more and more, and this method is called the wisdom of Kabbalah to this day. But this method, it lived in that group for about 1,500 years, meaning they used the method of the wisdom of Kabbalah for about 1,500 years, meaning they realized the method between them. Yes. Well, not everyone, part of them. It was a very big group. Rambam writes that it was tens of thousands that joined Abraham, and he took them with him. And those that joined, probably there were closer circles, more distant circles. And afterwards, they divided into Kohens and Levites, 12 parts, 12 tribes, the sons of Jacob, and so on. Okay, so I understand that there was this group. When I asked what gave the wisdom of Kabbalah a so-called bad name, you explained where was the wisdom of Kabbalah born, where did it start with Abraham and those that followed him, that realized it for about 1,500 years, and up till now, I have no negative or positive thought about this. Right, only this group, it existed and kept the rule of love another as thyself. But over time, time means that our ego is constantly growing. The ego also grew all the time in that group. And they started, they became less and less capable of keeping, observing this rule of love another as thyself, and they started falling from it. They build a good and nice connection called the First Temple. It's the connection between them. But it broke. It was destroyed. The temple was destroyed, but the connection broke, yeah. They even went back into the Babylonian exile in the days of Nebuchadnezzar. They were there and came back in the days of Queen Esther. And they were in constant struggles. What happened to the wisdom of Kabbalah when this connection between them broke? Part of the people that could no longer observe, keep, love another as thyself, disconnected from this wisdom, and part of the group that were now already called the people of Israel, that were able to keep love another as thyself, for them the wisdom of Kabbalah was the inner wisdom, the wisdom of their life according to which they lived their life. Meaning, they kept it, observed it, realized it. Yeah. In their love and the connection between them, and that part who couldn't realize this wisdom internally, couldn't keep it, they became engaged in external, physical actions, what we call to this day, mitzvot. That the inner part of the group that kept the wisdom of Kabbalah, their mitzvot were that they corrected their desire, because a person's egoistic desire is divided into 613 parts. And the correction of each such part into in order to bestow into love of others is called keeping, observing a mitzvah. And how do we keep it? By the upper light, the upper force that shines and corrects the intention of each desire from in order to receive to in order to bestow. And this light is called Torah. Therefore, keeping the mitzvot with the help of the Torah. As it says, I've created the evil inclination, the egoistic desire. I've created the Torah, spice, this great light, because the light in it reforms. It inverts the bad into good. And then, the part that were Kabbalists, they kept the Torah this way, and the part that didn't want and also couldn't, there were many different groups, denominations, sects, they're called by different names, that couldn't keep it, then they kept it in different external ways, because externally wise, you can keep it. And then, what the Kabbalists attained in practice, the others thought that they'll get it later, after this life, after their existence in this world ends. And since then, there is a rift in the nation, that a large part of the nation back then were still Kabbalists. They demanded, like Rabbi Akiva, till his very end, demanded, love another as thyself. And part said, no, we simply can't. What do you want from us? And so unfounded hatred bursted out among them, broke out among them, and Kabbalists hid themselves so much that Rabbi Shimon had to hide with his students in a cave in order to write the book of Zohar and to pass it on to mankind. Also, in what way they buried the book of Zohar, literally, and afterwards, it was revealed many years later. Who buried the book of Zohar? Rabbi Shimon himself with the students. What was he afraid of? Because there was no one to disclose it to. There were already the Romans here in Israel. They skinned his teacher, Rabbi Akiva. And therefore, they had no choice but to write on the one hand, and they wrote. They wrote a book that will be revealed after many generations. And when they themselves, they wrote it, they really buried it. And this book was discovered only about 800 years later, in the 9th century, I think. And it reached Rabbi Moshe de Leon, who was a Kabbalist in the 13th century. Rabbi Moshe de Leon was in the 13th century, right? Yeah. And he already revealed this book to everyone, and therefore everyone thought that he wrote it. Just to understand, why was it important for the Kabbalists back then to hide it, to bury it? because no one could understand it back then, because the people of Israel, they fell back into their ego. And therefore, the Book of Zohar was useless for them. They wrote the Book of Zohar in such a way that it will be revealed at the end of days, where it will really be necessary to correct the entire evil inclination of the people of Israel and of all of mankind. Because the Torah they were engaged in since the days of Abraham and up until the destruction of the Second Temple, until the days of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, they were engaged only in the Torah that suited only that group that came out of Babylon. But the Zohar is written not for this small group called Israel back then, but for the people of Israel that will come back in our times to the land of Israel, for them to correct themselves and also for them to draw light for the rest of humanity, actually for those same Babylonians that were together with them back then in Babylon when Abraham's group left. And therefore, the Book of Zohar, it was hidden, meaning the Book of Zohar is meant for our time. Yeah. And it was revealed by Rabbi Moshe de Leon, and afterwards, the great Kabbalist who started disclosing the wisdom of Kabbalah to us was the Ari in the 16th century. After the Ari came the Baal Shem Tov, who disclosed the practical work in the wisdom of Kabbalah. And then it unfolded through many great Kabbalists, especially through the students of the Baal Shem Tov, until Baal Sulam, which is already the beginning of the 20th century. And Baal Sulam, he wrote his commentary to all of the writings of the Ari called Talmud Esra Sfirot, the Talmud of the Ten Sfirot, and the commentary to the Book of Zohar called the Sulam, the Ladder. And so in our times we have these two great writings, the Talmud of the Ten Sfirot and the commentary to the Book of Zohar. Baal Sulam had another student, the Rabash, Rabbi Shalom Alevi Ashlag, who was my teacher, and he wrote, he continued after his father, he continued writing articles about the spiritual work, how every person, from the very, very beginning, he goes into the spiritual work and acquires it. Through it, enters the upper world, opens the whole of nature for himself. And Kabbalists throughout these generations, since the destruction of the temple and to this day, they were all kind of hidden or half hidden. And they always had problems. Always had problems. And only in our times, gradually, this matter started opening up. There are many people that are studying the wisdom of Kabbalah, even though that these are such kinds that don't bring them to utilize the wisdom of Kabbalah in a way that will correct their nature and will allow them to break into the spiritual life. But still, people are studying the Book of Zohar. You can find it in shops, even though that you can't understand that much from it. But still, it's there, and you can also buy the Talmud of the Ten Sfirot and other Kabbalah books. Most of the books that are called Kabbalistic literature isn't Kabbalistic at all. There are different remedies there, and Pulsa de Nura, and whatnot. So we have many questions about this, but still, alongside with it, there's also the real Kabbalah that deals with a person's internality, meaning how to correct human nature, to lift him above his ego. Okay, so I understand how the wisdom of Kabbalah developed throughout the generations and the processes that it went through, concealment and revelation and so on, and I still don't understand why does it have such a negative reputation? Why does it awaken in a person that doesn't know, that isn't familiar with it? Why does it evoke such a rejection in him? The wisdom of Kabbalah is opposed to this entire world, to the inanimate, vegetative, animate, and people. It's opposite to everything that we have in this world. It is a science from the next world, from another world. And what it talks about is something that has no basis and is completely unacceptable in this world. And therefore, when a person hears about it, subconsciously, even though that he doesn't know anything about it, but he has some kind of rejection, disrespect for it, something that he can't explain why, but this is how it is. Because hatred doesn't demand any proof. He doesn't like it, and that's that. So this feeling is natural? Yeah, it's a natural feeling. No one's to blame for it. No one. Is it good or bad? It's nature. When we see some animal, some strange animal, is it good or bad? It's nature, what can you do? But if you naturally suppose something rejects you, it's not appealing, then you're not trying to get closer to it. You leave it aside and that's that. True, here it's not so. So this is what I want to understand. Because we belong to the wisdom of Kabbalah in our internality, in our soul, and we can't really, like you're saying, put it aside as if it doesn't belong to us. It doesn't bother me. I can live my entire life without knowing anything about it. There are many other things that I don't know about, and it's not important for me. Here, it's different. Why? What's so special about the wisdom of Kabbalah? Because according to the plan of creation, we have to discover the upper world. And the only way that we can discover it is by using the wisdom of Kabbalah. And if we don't reveal it, then different problems and troubles that we start discovering in life, they push us towards it one way or another. Without the wisdom of Kabbalah, we can't discover the answer to the question of what is the meaning of life, what is the purpose of life, which is something that's really starting to bother us. These questions are really bothering us. Because of this, we fall into despair, drugs. We don't know how to educate our children. What kind of education should we give them? We see that our generation is slipping between our fingers. But there's like a paradox here. Usually, if I feel that I need something, then naturally I'm drawn to it. Here, you're describing a wisdom that probably we really need. And at the very same time, it rejects us. Why this paradox? Because it speaks about our need to restrict our desire, our ego, to restrict ourselves, to go on a diet. This I can understand. Good. Something that I really don't feel like doing, but I understand that you have no choice. Why? Because you have a higher goal. You want to look good, feel good. So it's important for you. So therefore, we have to understand, are these things that the wisdom of Kabbalah shows us, are these such important things that it's worthwhile for us, despite our rejection, to acquire it, realize it, at least discover it, understand what it speaks about, or not? And in our times, we're starting to feel uncomfortable. On the one hand, we probably have to. On the other hand, we don't want to. And we're talking about a very strict diet that really locks a person. When you're on a food diet, you can escape to something else. Here, you can't. Here, you have to teach, to educate yourself how to be in a group, how to be good towards others, start loving others, to cover all the unpleasant things that you see in others to cover it with good. Love covers for all crimes, and so on and so forth. Meaning here we're talking about changing our own nature. Our nature, which is done by actions, that by these actions, we invite the upper force, and it works and acts on us. And then what follows is that I'm willing to do anything but that. But that, because regarding any other action, I can depict what do I gain. But what do I gain here? I don't see anything. And therefore, not that it's hard. It's impossible. But the Torah gives us a solution. That it's with the help of a group, through studying together, through our connection called arvut, mutual responsibility, like it says in the Torah. By this, we can advance toward the reforming light called the Torah, and then it takes care of us and does it. But still, these actions, they're very hard. And this demands very meticulous education and teaching for everyone. Dr. Lightman, our time's almost up. We'll have other shows, more shows about this. What's important to take from this show, resistance to the wisdom of Kabbalah? The resistance to the wisdom of Kabbalah is natural, even if a person has no interest in it, because there are such groups that do have an interest, because the wisdom of Kabbalah is simply ruining their business. That's something else. And therefore, it's no wonder that no one wants to hear about it, see it, and if they do, then it's just for the fun and to keep on going. Still a transitional phase. Thank you very much, Dr. Lightman. Thank you, Nitza. Thank you for being with us. Till next time, all the best.